The second chapter that we are doing is called Sankhya Yoga. Now, why the word Sankhya? Yoga, of course, in the common means physical exercises, but here in the Gita, when they talk about yoga, yoga is that which is attached to the higher, comes from yuj, to unite with the higher. So any knowledge which connects me with God or with the higher is called yoga. That's why we have karma yoga, bhakti yoga, all the different chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. So this chapter is called Sankhya Yoga. Now, what is the meaning of Sankhya? There are two or three meanings. One is if you split it into sam and kya. Kya means known, sam means well known. So this knowledge called Sankhya Yoga teaches me very well who I am. What is my nature? Am I really this body or am I something other than the body? And what is my goal? What is my purpose? Everything in life is explained very clearly in this chapter called Sankhya Yoga. That's why this chapter is very voluminous, has several verses, because it contains a lot of information. Other meaning of Sankhya comes from Sankhya. In Hindi and in many languages, there is a word called Sankhya. Sankhya means counting, 1, 2, 3, 4. So this chapter, Sankhya Yoga, is a very systematic answer to Arjuna's problem. Arjuna was, of course, we know, grieving, sorrowful, because he had to fight this war against his near and dear ones. And he thought, I am doing it. I am the one going to be cause of this sorrow. And Krishna tells him that at various levels, your thinking is faulty. You are thinking yourself to be this ego, this limited Arjuna, but you are actually the highest reality. All of us are. All of us are that Om, that highest reality, appearing in this earth and working through the body. Through the body, I perceive the objects. Through the mind, I feel the emotions. Through the intellect, I think the thoughts, propelled by my vasanas or desires. And Om represents the divinity, God's presence in every one of us. And we have two personalities. One is the lower self, which I call myself Anil or Kerry or Satish. And I'm a male or female, Indian, American, white, black, all those. Those are my lower nature or my empirical identity with which I deal with the world. And there is my higher reality, which is called Om, which is the consciousness, the self. And we all are that. All of us are that one reality, taking different forms, different names. It's also there in the plant, animal, bird, fish, humans, but it is one reality. So Krishna scientifically explains to him, starting with the highest knowledge, and then slowly he moves down to the simpler knowledge of duty and all that. So he starts with the most difficult concept in the second chapter and then goes down easier. So the first next few verses will be a little hard, because they are the essence of the Upanishads. I'll try my best to go slowly and explain. And if you anything is not clear, please feel free to ask. But then subsequently, the Gita, the shlokas get easier. So Sankhya has two meanings. One is well known, clearly understood. And the second meaning is logical or systematic. Another meaning of Sankhya, which does not apply in the Gita, but there is a Sankhyan method of philosophy that was popularized by Kapil Muni. Now, who knows here who Kapil Muni is? Anybody knows who Kapil Muni was? Yes? Devahuti's son. And what did he do?
Kapil Gita, he taught to his mother.
Yes, he taught Kapil Gita to his mother. His mother actually was confused about her duties. And it was Kapil Muni who was so wise that he actually taught his mother this knowledge. Usually it's the other way around, the mother teaches. But Kapil Gita is unusual because it teaches, the child teaches the mother. And it's a very, very beautiful text where it gives all the different aspects of spirituality, which are very well covered. The copy is available in the office. Now, the Kapil Gita appears in Srimad Bhagavat. Now, do people know the difference between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavat? Can anybody tell me? Are they the same or is it different?
So, expounding on
Right. So the Bhagavad Gita tells us how to live. Srimad Bhagavat is a compilation of stories. It's a Purana composed by Ved Vyas Ji. The important thing about Srimad Bhagavat is it deals with Vishnu, with the Vishnu's 10 avatars, and mostly centered on Sri Krishna. So if you can just close the door a little bit more. So most of the Srimad Bhagavat talks about Sri Krishna's life and his leelas, but a lot of the Srimad Bhagavat is devoted to Vishnu's incarnations, his forms, all that. So that is the difference. So Bhagavad Puran is more stories, but Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Upanishads. Yes.
Is the story of Durga in that?
No, Durga is separate. Durga, there is actually a Devi Purana which has all the stories of. Actually, there is Devi Purana, there is Vishnu Purana, there is Shiv Purana, and they all have stories from different. So most of the stories about the mother goddess are in Devi Purana. Devi means mother goddess, and that's what we are celebrating for these 9 days. We are actually celebrating, honoring the mother goddess.
So Durga is an avatar.
Durga is she's not an avatar of Vishnu, no, she's not. Durga and Shiva are consorts. Durga is Shakti, Durga is power or energy. She works with Shiva, while Vishnu is with Lakshmi. And then Brahma, the creator, is with Saraswati. So for destruction, you need energy. So Shiva, being the destroyer, has to take us away, so he needs energy. Vishnu needs wealth to sustain, to maintain the universe, and to create, you need knowledge. So that's why it is all symbolic. Yeah, so Durga is not an incarnation of Vishnu, no. She is a manifestation of Brahman, of the Supreme Reality, as energy. It is actually the total energy in the entire universe. She represents the power, the Shakti. So that is what Durga represents. So as we said in the last time, Krishna tells Arjuna that you are talking like a wise person, but you are mourning over those who are gone or not yet gone. See, those of us, our grandfather, great-grandfather, are gone, and we are not yet gone. They are dead, we are not yet dead. So everybody is going to reach that state. So why should you mourn? I spent actually a whole hour on this word, so I won't go into the details. But he continues this topic in the verse number 12. Chapter 2, verse number 12. Natve vaham jatu nasam. Natvam neme janadhipaha. Nachaiva nabhavishyamaha. Sarve vayam atah param. So, na tu eva aham jatu nasam. So, Krishna says, aham jatu never na asam. I never was. It means there was never a time when I was not. I always was. So, he says, na ta eva aham. I was never a time when I was not there. I was always there, and that is true. God is always there. In the past, he was there even before the universe came. So Arjuna says, God, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me and all these other people. You know, we will all die. So many people will die. You are God. Nothing will happen to you. He says, na tvam na ime janadhipaha. Neither you nor these janadhipaha, these kings. There was never a time when they were not there. Not only me, but they were always there. He says, yes, they were always there. Yes, they were always there. And I was always there. You were always there. And these people were always there. He said, okay. I accept. You said, okay, I will always be there. They will always. No, we were in the past. We are in the present. How about the future? Will they die in the future? Na cha eva na bhavishyama. And there is never a time when we will not be. So we were always there in the past. We are here in the present. And we will always remain in the future. Sarve vayam atav param. Vayam means we all, atav param. Hereafter also, we all live forever. So obviously he's not talking about the body, right? Because we know that 100 years ago, none of us was there. And we are all here now, and then maybe another 30, 40, 50 years, we won't be here, we'll be gone. So he's not talking about the body. That at least is clear to all of us, or should be clear. So what is he talking about? Who is the one that is eternal? Who is the one that is permanent? So one permanent is God, and that we know. God, the consciousness, is permanent, always was there, is there, and will be there. Even the Bible says God alone was, and then in six days he created the world, the seventh day he rested. So the world came out of that. And then also the Bible talks about that there will be 40 days of rain, and the, you know, whole earth will, the whole universe will end. Even the our Vedas talk about pralaya, when the entire universe will end. Even science talks about all these stars which are bright soon run out of energy, they'll become black holes, and then one black hole will merge into another, and ultimately the whole universe will be just a black hole, and the world will end, and then again the creation will start. So all the sciences even talk about it. So that is one which is eternal. The other, which is also everlasting, I would not say eternal, but it is everlasting, is the jiva, the individuality. Now that is why do we say that? It is relatively eternal. It's not as eternal as Om, but in reincarnation or rebirth, this is going to be the topic today. So we'll spend some time talking about it. What happens to us at death? See, first of all, if you think that I appeared from nowhere, I just suddenly appeared in my mother's womb, and then I was born, I lived 60, 70, 80 years, and then I died, and then I went nowhere, it doesn't make sense. That is the Charvaka philosophy, the materialistic philosophy, that there is no past, there is no future, we are just an accident of birth, male and female, father and mother got together, and somehow I appeared, and forget about all this heaven and hell and all. This is just all these religious people, they just want to scare us. And that's why they, just to make us behave, they are saying, oh, you know, there will be a heaven, and then you will be punished. Life is meant to be enjoyed, you know, khaya piyo maja karo, have a good time. What are you worried about, past, future and all? This life is here, this human body is meant to be enjoyed, have fun. Don't waste your time in going to all these lectures and temple and church and all. That is just a business. So that's how they promote it. But to think that this is an accident is foolish, and all the scriptures support it. All the scriptures, not only Hinduism, but Christianity, Islam, everywhere this appears. And I'll quote that, and Guru Swami Chinmayananda, if those of you who have this at home, you can read it. He has very extensively quoted from all the scriptures about this incarnation, which is supported by Christ, Muhammad, and all the saints. So what happens at the time of death? For some of you, it may be basic, but it's good to repeat. See, the body, we all have the same human body, whether male and female, but basically it is very similar. We all have the same heart, lungs, brain, kidneys, etc. So the body perishes. At the time of death, the body perishes. Body doesn't live forever. Body was created in my mother's womb, and at the time of death, it will burn, or it will be buried, it will end. Now the Om, the consciousness or God within us, nothing happens to that, because they say how many atmas are there, how many consciousnesses. It's not her consciousness, his consciousness, her consciousness. There is one atma, one consciousness, one God that is there in all, that is there in saints, in sinners, in the plants, birds, trees. They're all the same. It is just the manifestation is different. It is different in a saint, different in a sinner, different in an animal, different in a bird, different in a fish. Its manifestations are different, but Om is the same. So what is me, the individuality? I think myself to be this body, but if I assume that the body will perish, they say, oh, after death, you will go to heaven or you will go to hell. And all the scriptures say that, whether it's Islam or Christianity or Hinduism, they all say that. So who is this you or I that will go to heaven or hell? And we say that is the subtle body, the mind and intellect. The subtle body, the mind and intellect, is the individuality because it decides who I am. My emotions, my thoughts, and my vasanas, my desires, determine who I am. My emotions are different from hers. My ideas are different from him. My desires are different from him. So that is the individuality, the jiva, which at the time of death is said to go into the higher worlds. It could be the higher worlds, heaven, or it could be the lower worlds, hell. But they are different worlds. They describe 14 worlds. And based on your level of goodness or the level of badness, you will go into one of those worlds and spend some amount of time. You don't know how much. It depends on how much good or bad you have done. And then you continue your journey based on your desires and based on your karma. So good or bad karmas. Good karmas give you a good body, a good family. Bad karmas give you a bad body or a bad family. So he says, when he says, I will always be there, he's talking about the consciousness, the Om. But even the individuality does not perish. It was there, they say it was 8.4 million births. So from 8.4 million births, this I have been going through various births, from started with the protozoa, then became a fish, then became an animal, bird, monkey and human. And then I will continue my journey. And when does the jivahood end? When I become one with God. When I realize my true nature, that and that alone will end your journey. Otherwise, you go on and on, on and on, on and on, on and on. Never ending journey through various births. If we do a lot of bad things, maybe next life I may be born as an animal or as a cockroach or a mosquito. If I do good deeds, I may be, we live in heaven for a while, maybe born as a higher being. And this theory of reincarnation is not only in Hindus, but I'll give you several quotations which show that all the religions believe in it, even though they don't emphasize it as much as we do. Christ says in one place, I have come to give you everlasting life. When he says everlasting life, does he mean that you will live for 200, 300, 400 years? No. Christ himself did not live for that long. He died at such a young age. So when he says everlasting life, he's talking about the consciousness. At another place, Christ says very clearly that John the Baptist was Elijah. John the Baptist was Elijah. So when he says that, what does it mean? That the one I'm seeing as John the Baptist was Elijah in some other birth. Oregon, one of the greatest fathers, the most knowledgeable priests of Christianity, said very clearly in his teaching, he says that man gets a body based on the deserts of his former life. That means the activities of his former life determine what kind of body I get. That is in the literature. I mean, not Solomon, in his Solomon teaching, says that if you are born with a sound body and a healthy limbs, you must have done good deeds in your past life. It is very clearly said. Muhammad, they say the Muslims don't believe in it. He says very clearly, he says, I was a stone and I became a plant. I was a plant, I became an animal. I was an animal, I became a human. Now as a human, why should I be afraid to die? Because I will continue and be born as a spirit. So all the teachings say that. Buddha repeatedly talks about his previous births, my previous multiple births. Krishna, of course, talks in the fourth chapter that I was the one who gave this knowledge to Lord Sun. And Arjuna says, you have only been here, 50, 60 years I'm seeing you. How could you have given the knowledge to Lord Sun, who was billions of years ago? So Krishna says, I have had many births and so have you. I know all of them, you don't. That is the difference in the fourth chapter. Max Müller and several authors, several poets, several scholars have supported this theory of reincarnation, and they are listed in the commentary. I didn't want to list them all. You're welcome to read it afterwards. But people say, I don't believe in reincarnation. Give us some proof. And I want some proof. Has somebody gone and there and then come back and said, you know, I remember my, has somebody said it? We want some proof. We don't have direct proof, but we have four very, very indirect, very strong evidence. Very strong evidence. It's like somebody was not, they said, did anybody see him commit the murder? No, nobody saw him. But we have indirect evidence, what they call, the prosecutor will say, well, there was a gun, his fingerprints were on the gun, and the bullet that went came from his gun, even though he was not there, his fingerprint, his DNA was there, and then he had reason to shoot because he had enmity. So a lot of, even though somebody did not directly see him shoot, there is enough indirect evidence to convict that individual. So similarly here, we have four indirect evidence, which is very, very powerful, which will make us believe, even if you don't believe in the rebirth of the soul. So one is child prodigies. And we have so many examples. Mozart, by age four, he was already composing, not only playing the piano, he was composing songs. By five, he was performing publicly. By seven, he composed his first opera, entire opera. How could he have got that at age four, even before 4 years? He had to have. Bobby Fischer was a grandmaster at age nine, a chess grandmaster. And at age nine, he was, they gave him a chess board and he picked it up just like that. And he was playing with the world's best. He actually was world champion for a while. He actually beat the Russian, you know, he was the number one. Raman Maharishi by age 6 or 7 was going into deep meditation, into samadhi, and he could actually separate himself from his body. If you go to YouTube, you see kids 1 or 1.5 years playing the tabla. They just give them the tabla and he starts playing. How could he have done that? Nobody teaches him. The tabla is a very complicated set of drums. So child prodigies is one way to that they must have this knowledge in their past life. Otherwise, they couldn't have done so well. Also, we see that children, some children are in the same household, the same parents, the same. One child is interested in art. Another one is interested in science. A third one is interested in sports. And the parents try, but no, one says, I do not want to study. I just want to be a football player. Other ones, they tell him, you know, you need to go to science. You need to become a doctor, Banja. You know, they always tell them. He says, no, I don't want to be a doctor. I'm interested in becoming an artist. I want to become an actor or a painter. He says, you know, they don't make any money. You will starve. He says, I don't care. You know how Indian parents, we all want our kids to be doctors. But some of them don't. I have a very good friend of mine who's a pulmonologist, highly successful. His son went into acting. He said, I do not want to be a doctor. Very, very successful physician. He's in New York. He studied the drama and he's in acting in plays and all. I told him, he said, what can I do? He does. So a lot of this comes from previous birth. Second is people remembering. And Swamiji in his commentary has given an example, I'll just list it, and which was actually, I read it in the paper when it first appeared. This was documented by journalists. It's not somebody making up. It was in the Times of India. So this Ram Kali was a girl who was about 7 or 8 years old. And since 3 years of age, she was telling her father that I was somebody else. And I'm not here. I was living in this village in a different state. She kept telling her father, and I want to go there. Father said, you know, she's just blabbering, but finally just to humor her. And then even some journalists came to know that she keeps saying that. So they said, okay, let's go and see, you know, she's just make her happy. So they went there and she went, they took her to that village, which she had never been, in a different state. And she said, she led them to her house from here, go right, go left. Yeah, this is my house. This is where I live. And then she went there and she saw two young men and she started crying. So why are you crying? She said, these are my children. She recognized and she named these two young men. She said, these were my, and she actually named them. Is your name this? Is your name this? She had never seen those young men. And then there was a younger child and she says, yeah, this was born to me before I died. That's how I gave up my life, because I in childbirth. And then she said, this house, you know, this wall was not there. You changed this wall, you painted it. So she was able to exactly demonstrate all the things that she had never seen because she remembered her past birth. And when she left, she was actually crying. She said, I do not want to leave my sons. She's 7 years old. Her sons are 30 and 28. But because, you know, when she passed away, so that is the second. And there are more than quite a few examples in people, especially in the early stages of their life, people do remember. And then slowly by age 2, 3, 4, they forget. But there have been quite a few instances. The third is the law of karma. Because the law of karma applies to everybody. If I do good, I get good. If I do bad, bad things will happen. So my job is to do as good as possible. And we tell our children also, if you study well, you will do good in the exam. If you don't study, you will fail. And same way, if you help people, good things will happen. If you harm people, bad things will happen. You know, we say what goes around comes around. But how about if somebody dies without fulfilling his karma? I have done a lot of bad things to a lot of people. And I lose my body, for example, Hitler. Now, he killed 7 million Jews. So much tragedy he caused, not only for other countries, for his own people. And when they were about to capture him, he committed suicide. So you mean to say he escaped all those things? No. You have to. And people just say hell, you know, that he lived in hell. He could have. But if I have a debt to somebody, I have to pay it. If I took $5,000 from somebody, stole it, and cheated him out of that money, sooner or later I have to pay it back in this life or in a future life. So the law of karma is totally 100%. So that is the third proof that whatever actions I have done, good or bad, if I do not, suppose I've been a very good person, done a lot of good, but still had a very unhappy life, too many problems, then what will happen? The Lord will give me a better birth. And Krishna says in the 6th chapter that you will continue your journey in the house of yogis, in a good family, where you can continue the spiritual journey. And the 4th and the most important proof is the merciful Lord. Now we say God is all merciful, all loving, all compassionate, all kind, all gentle, all sweetness. But some people, you know, are born intelligent and some people have Down syndrome. Some person is healthy, another person has no limbs at birth. Somebody is born in the house of Rockefeller or, you know, Bill Gates or somebody from a wealthy family. Another one is born in some poor house in Africa, you know, where the parents have AIDS and the child is born with AIDS. Why would the Lord do that? If he's loving, if he's compassionate, you think he just flips a coin, okay, heads, okay, he goes here, tails. No, he's not like that. He's loving, he's compassionate. So the fact that we have differences, different people, different destinies, different parents, different circumstances, there has to be a law of karma, and the Lord is just carrying it out. He's not playing favorites. He's not partial. He loves all of us equally. And based on that, I get my life. And the only thing that we can come from this, I cannot change my past, whatever I have done, but at least I can improve my present so I do as much good as possible so that my future is good. So that is the essence of this particular verse that he says that we always were there and we always will be there. So death is just a change of clothes, which he will talk in more detail in the next verse. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru. Hari.